We are creating a huge network of volunteers who are culturally competent to walk with these folks for 5 years. At 5 years, they're eligible for citizenship.
What are people up to in town? Find out on Out There Wednesday afternoons from 4 to 5 on Valley Free Radio for live encounters from the streets and paths of Northampton and beyond. We don't care if we live out of date. We don't care if we're a little bit late. Gonna make a scene, baby, me and you. On my rocking bicycle that's built for two. Yes, it's Wednesday. Thanks for tuning in to Out There today. Today's show is from a September 28th informational house meeting about refugee resettlement in Northampton. Susanna Crolius from Catholic Charities is the main speaker for the first part of it. This first clip starts out a little bit in the middle of Susanna's talk. I turned on my recorder a few minutes late, but she's talking about the different classifications of like refugee, asylum seeker, displaced person, internally displaced person, what all those things mean.
You might hear displaced people. They can be internally displaced within their own country, or they can be displaced outside of their country. So, but when you cross a border, you seek asylum in the country where you've crossed that border. The process of applying to be you are an asylum seeker as you are crossing a border, saying that you need protection, you can't go back to your home country, and that you need you want to become a citizen, or you want to become make home in this country where you've crossed a border. So there are 65 million forcibly displaced people in the world right now. 65 million. Of which 21 million, only 21 million, will actually become refugees. That's a title that, it's a classification. When you cross a border, you seek asylum, and you seek the protection from the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, which is the global body that is charged with protecting and managing those who are fleeing. So not everybody who flees or crosses a border chooses to the protections of UNHCR. Some try to make a living in the town or the city where they have fled to. But when you choose to register with UNHCR, UNHCR says we will protect you, we will give you basic medical care, food. Food is sort of a very, food might be, what, a bag of rice every 2 weeks? Yep. Mm-hmm. But by being registered with UNHCR, you get in the, and I hate this language, but it's the only way that you can get in the pipeline, so to speak, to be resettled in another country. And you have to go through a long, and Suzanne will tell her story, a long interview process of having to prove that you have a well-founded fear of persecution or violence, or because of religious affiliation, ethnic affiliation, political opinion, and a couple of other categories. So basically, the onus is on the person fleeing to prove to UNHCR that there's a well-founded fear and you can't go back. Ideally, everybody wants to go back to their home country if it's safe. And that's the first choice that anybody wants, to go back. That's called repatriation. Sometimes that happens, and most of the time it doesn't. It's just not safe to go back. And then the second choice would be asylum in the first country of asylum, which is when you cross the border. And they say, yes, we will invite you to stay here and become a member of our society here. That's how a lot of folks are trying to make it when they flee. The last option is to be resettled in a third country of asylum. There are only 28 countries that resettle refugees around the world. Only 28 countries. So of 21 million people who are registered as refugees, less than 1% of those will actually be resettled. So you can just get the sense of this epic crisis of 65 million people. Where do they go? 21 million registered refugees, but a tiny number of those will be resettled in another country. It's a huge, an epic crisis. And what happens with all of these people, 50% of which are children? I mean, it's mind-boggling. I won't go into the details of the long process. Once you are registered through UNHCR, you'll be in a camp. You can't work. You can't really move out of the camp. You sort of wait. You wait and you wait and you wait and you wait. It's sort of this long bureaucratic process of who gets interviewed and who gets chosen and who gets invited to actually be resettled into a third country of asylum. And I'm happy to point you to resources that tell you who all those groups are that make that happen. But for our purposes here, in the United States, the State Department oversees this refugee resettlement process. It is a federal program, the federal government, the State Department's goal for refugees is self-sufficiency. It's such a great Western term, isn't it? Self-sufficiency.
As if any of us are truly self-sufficient.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. But that, being the good Americans that we are, self-sufficiency. And what they mean by that is that, the goal is for newly arrived refugees to be employed. And employment will begin them on that path of becoming sufficient, self-sufficient, of being able to make a living here. Am I saying this all right?
Mm-hmm.
You can jump in any time. But here's the catch with self-sufficiency. The federal program says we will pay a resettlement agency money to help for 90 days.
90 days.
90 days. And by the end of 90 days, our hope is that the head of household will be employed and will be sort of on the path to being able to be a member of their community. So you can imagine the 90 days, if you don't speak the language, you can imagine that 90 days just doesn't give anybody any time. Some folks do okay in the 90-day period of time. It sort of depends on your level of English language learning from where you come from. It depends on whether you, it depends on several factors, but for most folks, 90 days is just, it's impossible. So what does that have to do with us? So Catholic Charities, because it's a part of the Western Mass Refugee and Immigrant Consortium and it works with refugees, has seen how this 90-day period of time does not serve most refugees well and does not serve the receiving communities that have refugees in them very well. You know, because it's a federal program, you know, you can resettle refugees and you know, the school system has to respond to whatever student needs show up on your doors. You can imagine that a community might want to be prepared for receiving refugees. So at Catholic Charities, we've seen how... We daydreamed about if we were to ever resettle refugees, saying we're never going to resettle refugees because we just sort of see the inadequacies in the federal system. If we were to ever resettle refugees, though, what might that look like? What might that look... How might that look different than how it is, how the model from the federal government looks? And then we got the opportunity. President Obama raised the cap. Our national voluntary agency, which is connected with the Catholic Church, called us and said, would you consider resettling refugees? And we said, no, we won't, because we would want to do it in a very different way. And shortly after that first phone call came, the City Council in Northampton passed a resolution, if you remember, last December, welcoming refugees. And they did that really as a political statement against all the rhetoric and many, many, many governors around the country who were saying, we don't want these terrorists in our, you know, in our country. We just so the City Council in Northampton put out a statement saying, well, you know, we're a welcoming city. We are hearing all this rhetoric around us. And we just want the world to know that we're a city that welcomes refugees. So when we heard that, we went to the City Council and we said, so we've just had this offer of resettling a small number of refugees, and we've said no, because we don't want to resettle down in Greater Springfield because there are thousands of refugees resettled there already. There are two agencies resettling down there. You've said that you welcome refugees. How eager are you to sort of walk this talk? We have this window of opportunity to resettle a small number, but we really want to do this as a community-based effort. We want to be in partnership with a community that really wants refugees as neighbors and really has the capacity and the heart and the spirit to help create home for a group of people who will have some particular needs that will need to be nurtured along the way. City Council said, we'll explore this with you. That's an intriguing idea. We went right to the mayor of Northampton because we have had experiences with other mayors not supporting refugees in their communities. We went right to the mayor, and the mayor said, why wouldn't we resettle refugees here in Northampton? Why wouldn't we? So that opened the door more. We gathered a group of about 50 community leaders, key stakeholders that the mayor's office chose, the City Council chose, folks that we thought could be initial real allies in getting this off the ground. And we thought that they would give us a pulse of the community about whether the city had the capacity and the willingness to really follow through on this. So we had a meeting in June, and virtually everybody said, of course we should explore this. Of course we should. So the door has just opened. It's just opened wider and wider and wider as we've had more and more conversations. And so that brings us to sort of why we're gathered here and why we are doing what we are doing, because of this approach that we want to do this in. So let me stop for a minute. Any questions so far?
You've been listening to a presentation by Susanna Crolius of Catholic Charities. Catholic Charities is one of the main partner organizations that's going to be involved in resettling refugees coming to Northampton in 2017. This presentation was from an informational house meeting at my house in Florence on September 28th, 2016. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio.
I have lots of questions and a number of ideas, too. Again, I'm Fran. And maybe you're going to get into this because I think it's the identified 51 people,
yep.
17 families,
yep.
And you probably know what some the size of the families are. Because I have lots of questions, particularly around housing concerns and other things. So I have lots of questions and suggestions as well.
So let me just say where we're at mm-hmm. now, mm-hmm. and then
and timeline too.
Yeah, and then jump in with those housing questions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, that was obviously the issue that was identified right away. You know, Northampton is an expensive place.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't any there's not much affordable housing. The rents are high.
Mm-hmm.
How is this just possibly going to work in Northampton?
Mm-hmm.
So we've identified, so what felt most important to us in our approach was that the community really wanted to make home for these 10 to 17 families. However many it is. We don't actually know.
Oh.
We don't. Part of the resettlement process is that we know very little about who's coming until just about when they arrive. The State Department will call us and say, we have the Al-Zubadi family from Syria. It's mom and dad and three kids who are age XYZ.
Oh, so
and meet them at the airport, you know, tomorrow night.
So that does make it hard to plan. It makes it very hard to plan. Yeah.
It makes it. What we do know is that we've requested folks to come from Syria, Iraq, Burundi, or Congo, because those are the populations that are in most need of resettlement. So that's about all we know. So what has happened in this Northampton process since we've had sort of the door open and open and open is we gathered a steering committee of people who were from that original group of community leaders. From the steering committee, we have identified working groups that will focus on particular areas of concern: housing, employment, public education, sort of ongoing public education, the school system, and the need for volunteers and what that will look like. Because the volunteers are the key piece to this. You know, we're not leaving these families high and dry after 90 days. You know, we're not doing that. The federal system basically sort of says, well, after 90 days, you're sort of on your own. I mean, that's I'm being a bit dramatic. There are certainly some programs that assist people for 8 months to a year, but not all families qualify for those. So the philosophy really is sink or swim. You know, we'll give you a leg up for the first 90 days, and then sort of have a go at being self-sufficient here in the United States.
One question?
Yeah, sure, of course.
What you were saying earlier, I've gotten a couple of questions from people who've asked, why was the request put in for people from several different countries as opposed to, like, one place with a similar culture or language or whatever? And I'm just sort of curious so I can communicate better what their thinking was.
We didn't have we could have gone to the State Department and said, we only want folks from Syria.
Mm-hmm.
It is unlikely that the State Department would have said, okay. That they have, the whole system is such that it sort of depends on who's coming up through the pipeline. I mean, it's this very sort of dance that the State Department does both with international organizations. So the best that we could say is four countries.
Okay, great.
Okay. It makes perfect sense to think, why wouldn't we settle, you know, 51
sure.
Burundians here in Northampton?
Yeah.
If we could, we would.
You know, I heard this NPR radio show, and I think it was focused on Canada and a couple communities that really have taken people in, and they were waiting and waiting. They said, oh, let's take folks from Syria. And they were waiting for months, and then they decided to open it up because there's not always enough people in the pipeline at any given time to come from one country or another.
Well, and, so, you know, unfortunately, folks from Syria are going through a much more stringent vetting process. Anytime something happens in the world that has Islamic State attached to it, it sort of slows down the process. So it's been touch and go with the Syrian community for the last year. I mean, we thought many were coming, and then all these things happened, and then there was this sort of halt. And of course, our federal government folks in Congress said we don't want. There's sort of been this ongoing argument about whether this particular group of people should be resettled in this country. That block seems to have opened, and we have now the 10,000 that were scheduled to be resettled from Syria have, in fact, been resettled in the United States.
When was that? When did that happen?
It's happened over the course of the year. Folks don't come all at once. They come in a staggered system for a variety of reasons, as will our 51. They'll be coming over the course of about 10 or 11 months. So it might be one family that arrives in January. It might be two families. We requested the lowest number of refugees that we could because we want to get this right. This is a project. This is an initiative that we are asking the city of Northampton to partner with us in the spirit of, I don't want to use the word pilot because these are people's, it's life and death issues. We don't want to be experimenting with this. I'm sort of trying to find the right word. We want to do it right, and so we're going to start with a small number of people, and we're going to see how this partnership between Catholic Charities and the people of Northampton works. We want to sort of work out the kinks of this. We don't have a goal of resettling hundreds of refugees. That's not our goal. We want to do this right.
If there's a way, and maybe right's not even the right word, even though I said it, or as well as we can, because it will be imperfect.
You know? Absolutely.
Life is, and there's going to be many, many challenges.
I think what is what we're trying to do is line up ahead of time all the pieces that need to be in place, knowing that there will be bumps along the way. But so often what happens is there's such a large number flowing through with larger resettlement agencies the focus tends to be on those first 90 days because when you're resettling a lot of people, there's just sort of this constant flow of people in different stages.
And in fairness to the larger agencies, you know, we kind of say what their faults is, they're dealing with a lot of people and a relatively small number of volunteers.
Tiny number of volunteers.
And sometimes what happens is, often, is despite the promises the federal government makes, they tend to cluster them all, and you get a surge of them at the end of the fiscal year.
Yeah.
You may remember, halfway through the year, we had only taken in 2,000 Syrians, and the other 10,000 came like the last 3 months.
Yeah.
All right, so you can imagine in that situation, all of a sudden, hey, you're getting five families tomorrow. It's really quick, hurry up, book in an apartment, you know, just keep them from ending up on the street.
Yeah.
So you don't always have the niceties of doing everything like that. But we're trying to have a system where it can be more flexible, where you can say to people, yes, you're going to get a family. We don't know exactly when, but please hang loose and keep this thing going, and then when it happens, it'll happen.
We're getting the school system on board ahead of time so that they understand what their responsibilities are to serve these students and these parents well. We're lining up housing. ahead of time, so we are not caught scrambling and having to put people in some dumpy situation. And I think the key piece to what we're trying to do is creating a huge network of volunteers who are culturally competent to walk with these folks for 5 years. At 5 years, they're eligible for citizenship. You know, the needs are very intensive, obviously, in the first 90 days. With Catholic Charities as the reception and placement agency, there are many things that we have to put into place in those 90 days, sort of things that connect people to different systems. But you can imagine that this integration process just unfolds over a long, long period of time. I mean, if you've ever moved to another country or you've ever been in another country for a long period, you can imagine trying to learn the implicit culture, you know, I mean, the language learning, how to ride the bus, I mean, it's huge, and it takes a long time. And so that's what we're asking the people of Northampton to do, which is partner with us in, number one, helping us identify some potential housing. And I'll say more about that in a minute.
I'd lots to say about that.
Help us identify employers or apprenticeships that we can plug these new families into, and help us form both circles of care that will surround these families, and sort of a list of general volunteers that may have all kinds of skills. You would not believe how many Arabic speakers we have discovered who live here in Northampton.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's amazing. people who can teach cooking, people who can do childcare, we have a group of mental health practitioners who we're gathering who are trying to figure out a creative way to do culturally appropriate mental health support, because virtually all of these folks will come with some level of trauma. So in the spirit of creativity and innovation, we're saying, how might this happen in Northampton? And why Northampton? Because number one, it made a very clear statement that it wanted to welcome folks. And number two, it has a lot of capacity. And we want to stretch people in understanding how many resources it does have, not just financial resources. Just with the colleges, with RSVP, which is the Retired and Senior Volunteer Program. I mean, there's so much here that we can together capitalize on to create this infrastructure that will help refugees thrive.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. You've been listening to a presentation by Susanna Crolius of Catholic Charities. Catholic Charities is one of the main partner organizations that's going to be involved in resettling refugees coming to Northampton in 2017. This presentation was from an informational house meeting at my house in Florence on September 28th, 2016. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. We're going to take a little break and we'll have more.
Hold on to me as we go, as we roll down this unfamiliar road. And although this wave is stringing us along, just know you're not alone. 'Cause I'm gonna make this place your home. Settle down, it'll all be clear. Don't pay no mind to the demons, they fill you with fear. The trouble, it might drag you down. You will
That was Philip Phillips.
I found a boy today. It looks so good, why did you throw it away?
You want to learn to fix your bike? How to keep it tuned up so it's there for you when you need it? Or maybe you know already, but you just need to borrow a bike-specific tool that you don't have. Well, come to the Bike Lab.
Almost every Saturday since 2004, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., here in Northampton at 12 Northern Avenue.
Come with your bike or your questions.
And your willing attitude.
Spare parts scavenger hunt every weekend.
Venga para el Bike Lab de Northampton y se divertirá mucho, le enseñará muchas lecciones cómo arreglar bicicletas.
All repairs guaranteed to the end of the driveway.
Details are online at pedalpeople.coop. That's the Saturday Bike Lab at 12 Northern Avenue,
11 a.m. to 2 p.m.
They say freedom isn't free, but at the Bike Lab it is.
Ya súbase a la bici, compa. Trépese a la de montaña, la bici urbana, la bici cross. Lléguele a la bicicleta. Ya de menos a la eléctrica o a la estática, ya no hay tos. Llegaré pedaleando en el viaje de allá para acá.
We are Aikido of Northampton, and you're listening to Valley Free Radio, 103.3 FM, WXOJLP Northampton.
You're listening to Out There. Today's show, I've been playing a presentation given by Susanna Carolius of Catholic Charities. Catholic Charities is a partner organization that's working to resettle refugees in Northampton in 2017. And they were doing house meetings all around Northampton to build support in the community. The next clip is going to be about housing and people trying to figure out the housing piece.
Mm-hmm. So, what questions? So, the housing.
So, some initial questions are, what is the thought? Is it to get people their own housing that can be ongoing? And if that, you know, as opposed to families taking families in or what have you, and I would think ideally families would want their privacy if they could and have their own ongoing place. And I've done in the past both volunteer and paid work in nonprofit housing organizations, but knowing what a deficit of affordable housing there is in Northampton, and I have some thoughts. I actually think it may be possible to fundraise and buy some buildings, and that, I mean, because there are not all communities taking in refugees, but, you know, there's connections. And I actually spent time looking through Realtor.com and other sources last night and sort of identified, okay, what's a few multi-family buildings and apartment buildings, not just in Northampton, but East Hampton also. So I kind of think we may end up going into other communities. And I only say this, and it may be developing partnerships with other communities because there is so little affordable housing here. I live in the South Street neighborhood, and there was a very big meeting like this the other week, and so many people wanted to go. They couldn't fit more than 40 people in the house or whatever. So I was very grateful, Ruthie and Alex, for having this. But there was someone in our neighborhood. We have a very active neighborhood email where people email each other all day long about all sorts of things. And various people have looked for housing sometimes for a year or more and ended up moving to Greenfield. These were people who were already living in Northampton, but when the house they were living in was selling, they couldn't find a place to live here, and they're already living here. So I think that one thing may be fundraising, buying multifamilies or apartment buildings. It may be a way of preserving some affordable housing for everybody, as well as helping refugees resettle. And the reason there's a lot of refugee resettlement in the Greater Springfield area is housing's much cheaper.
It actually isn't.
It isn't?
It isn't. I mean, it is very expensive in Northampton.
Yeah.
But you will find that it is prohibitively expensive given what the federal government gives agencies. I mean, it is. There's an affordable housing crisis around the country.
Yes.
And yes, it is a matter of degree in Northampton. Mm-hmm. But it is number one, there is a dearth of affordable housing in the Greater Springfield area. There is a dearth of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the rents are not cheap.
They're not cheap. They're a little cheaper, but not very cheap. Right. And you're right. But you can buy buildings for cheaper in Springfield. So, but I think this may be one way to do it. And I also called, I used to be a member of a community land trust that we used to have in Northampton, no longer exists, dissolved around 10 years ago. There were a few buildings that were purchased in it, and now Valley Community Development Corporation manages it, and maybe they're part of the
network.
They're
part of the conversation.
But there is, for example, the new, and I don't know if it's been downloaded, how many units. It was planned for 55, maybe it's 41 units right on Pleasant Street. Northampton's going to be built. It's not going to be built by January, but that's family housing, considered family housing, right downtown. It may be worth working with an existing nonprofit to help fundraise and maybe build a capacity. Even if there's other buildings that are identified, can we work with a nonprofit so to keep those buildings affordable?
So that's what the Housing Working Group is.
Yeah.
It is a coalition it's this group of all the people who are sort of networked into housing who are working on finding a creative solution. What does a creative solution look like? Well, at least initially what we're saying is and we hear the message that housing is really expensive here and that there isn't enough, and we keep challenging Northampton to say you can say that and there is truth to that, but what are you going to do to help increase the sense of people who can who may not be able to afford? What is the city going to do about this? So we are asking people who either may own a mother-in-law. So the State Department says yes, these families do. They cannot live with other families. They can do that temporarily. Mm-hmm. Temporarily meaning up to a couple of weeks. Like it's and we have lots of people who have come forward on the temporary housing list saying we've got.
I was wondering about.
Yes,
that.
Yeah. So we're and the housing group is working group is working on a larger on finding these permanent places. So we believe, and we're already seeing it, and that's why we're having all these house parties. Somebody has a mother-in-law apartment. Somebody has a neighbor who is on sabbatical for the next couple of years. Somebody has a multifamily house that the first floor is open. And are you, as a landlord, willing to offer below market rent for a period of time that will allow this family to get their feet under them for the first year or two? So people are coming forward.
Are there incentives for these landlords?
We'd have to talk to the housing group about it. I mean, I think there are tax breaks in doing that. And Annie Dorn, who lives here, is very excited about the prospect of. She's been eyeing some buildings downtown Northampton, and seeing about getting some. When she comes back, she's got a vision about buying some buildings on Market Street, and I believe firmly we have connections to people who we believe could help fund buying these buildings.
And the other thing you have to keep in mind is that yes, it might be a little cheaper in East Hampton, although it's not that much cheaper. I've been looking around myself.
Yeah.
Or Hadley maybe be even cheaper. But now you're talking about putting kids in a separate school system, maybe a separate health care provider, maybe a farther away from the office, the bus lines. So for a host of practical reasons, we can keep them as close to, as we can.
This initial project will be in Northampton. It may be that we will have you. In fact, we've had some, Hadley itself has in some ways sort of reached out and sort of said, but we're saying right now for this initial 51, we're partnering with Northampton, and we're seeing how we can make this work.
Because what happens is that once you get over that first year, that first initial thing, refugees, most of whom do very well, they do what any of us would do, especially if you don't have small kids. Mm-hmm. You get an apartment in West Springfield, or you move to Chicopee. You know, they're not all in the city of Springfield anymore. And I imagine that'll probably happen. There'll be people say, hey, why am I paying this here? You know, I'll go somewhere off Route 9, some apartment in Hadley or something.
Right.
But they're not ready for that right away.
And transportation is a huge issue. And we're working, this infrastructure is building infrastructure in Northampton. We have, there is a healthcare provider who, Pioneer Valley Bay State Family Practice, that will take on the medical care of these refugee families. You know, we're working closely with the school system. It really behooves the families to be in one community at least initially.
And is there an anticipated office for the refugee resettlement?
It will open, I think, this week. At the former St. Mary's Rectory, at the rectory and at St. Mary's Church.
On King Street or on Elm Street?
It's on the corner. Yeah, it's on the
right
corner.
Right by there.
Russell
there.
Smith.
Yeah. And we have a case manager who will a social work case manager who will deal with all the the nitty gritty stuff. There's this whole process that the State Department mandates from us to have in place. We have that in place, and now what we're doing is sort of crossing T's and dotting I's with this long-term infrastructure. We've hired a person who is an ESOL, workforce development person, who is going to work with Center for New Americans and International Language Institute in partnering for the language piece. But if you know of a housing situation...
Mm-hmm. I can tell you, I own a two-family, though it's rented. I don't think my person's leaving. But I can tell you, there are property owners who own two families in Northampton who don't rent out their other unit because they've had terrible experiences with tenants. But,
and that's
you know,
a good point. I've said that at other meetings, and I find this a lot in Springfield. Granted, Springfield's a poor community. Mm. You've got a larger percentage of people who might have social problems this year. But refugees are better tenants.
Mm-hmm.
It's been proven over and over again. You know, sometimes we make a little too much about, well, they've never used an electric stove when they're from Africa. That stuff you could pick up very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and refugees, and you know, the first month, instead of handing them that initial cash, we'll pay the landlord ourselves usually on their behalf.
So
refugees, they tend not to stiff rents. They tend to be better tenants.
And Catholic Charities has some funds that it is putting aside to, it's not quite subsidize, but Catholic Charities is putting some funding aside that will offer these families to help cover some of the costs or some of the additional costs of these rents initially. So these systems are in place. Housing is definitely sort of the big issue, but it's feeling less impossible as time is going on. I mean, we've had something like 15 or 16 house parties, and you know, we're looking at housing 17 families.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're not looking at housing 100 families.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And Annie Dornan works for Catholic Charities?
No, Annie Dornan.
Annie, who lives in this?
Yes.
Oh, oh.
She
Annie.
Has,
oh,
she,
okay.
Before she came to a house party, has this idea. She has this vision about some space on Market Street. And when she comes back from Brazil, she's going to be pursuing it doggedly, she tells me.
And I think it is a nice thing to tie it in with, if it's a multi-unit building and getting people to, you know, donate money is to not necessarily an income-producing thing, but to keep some affordable housing for everyone.
The possibilities are endless. So any questions about housing? Any thoughts about housing? Anything about that?
You've been listening to a presentation by Susanna Crolius of Catholic Charities. Catholic Charities is one of the main partner organizations that's going to be involved in resettling refugees coming to Northampton in 2017. This presentation was from an informational house meeting at my house in Florence on September 28th. 2016. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. This is Running, also called Refugee Song.
Can you see strength in my eyes? I used to sleep through the night. Then hurricane, there were no lights, no sirens, just guns. It was violent and we had to run or die.
much time wasting in tears. 17 years inside a fence. I ran from the war, homeless, no school, no future. I'm a ghost, but not finished. I will run. Say, oh.
Running to is running through my mind. Always on the run, am I running out of time? Darkness in my way, I pray that the sun will shine. Started from the bottom and that was underlined by the place that I'm from. Sometime is undivine. I hear them songs of freedom and they running through my mind. Close my eyes, imagine a place next to me where I no longer can be labeled a refugee. Destiny, oh, somewhere down these dark roads. Yeah, we the lost tribe, but we found our souls. Cold rain, old pain, I left along the way. I fight through the night just to find a stronger day.
Running from the place that I know.
I'm running.
What direction should I go?
I'm running.
So tired and so worn. I won't stop until I'm safe and strong.
Say you
and flee the place you love.
Say you.
Tough as nails when things got rough.
Say you.
Many fathers told their sons.
Say you.
And daughters, don't stop running till you're home.
Say you.
That was Running or Refugee Song featuring Gregory Porter, Common, Keon Harold, and Andrea Pisacconi. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I've been playing a recorded house meeting presentation by Susanna Crolius of Catholic Charities. This is WXOJ LP 103.3 FM in Northampton and streaming online at valleyfreeradio.org. You can also listen to archived editions of Out There at weatherbeard.com/out there. I'm going to play a little bit more from that meeting. Next week, I'm going to play Suzanne's story as she told it at the meeting, not to be confused with Susanna, but Suzanne was a refugee from Burundi who made it to West Springfield with many trials and travails. Stay tuned next week, next Wednesday from 4 to 5 for that show. Democracy Now! Will be up at 5 o'clock. And thanks for listening. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring.
I was about to ask you about like having host families, and you said that that's already in place and people have offered for temporary situations, like when they first come, because that was the first thing I thought of. It might be really nice for the community, like, to have this cross-cultural exchange, and the people who are coming can learn more about our culture from people in a intimate and, you know, a way that's not like you're in a classroom learning about it. It's like you're learning from the family, like the exchange students, you know?
It makes perfect sense, and the State Department says, nope, they've got to be self-sufficient. So, I mean, it's the State Department really says we don't welcome that model here in the U.S. Canada does it differently, but the State Department says...
Not even for a few weeks?
They said a maximum. We've been sort of pushing this, trying to push this with them a bit. And, you know, they say a week, maybe 2 weeks, and after that, no.
Well, having said that, what happens is you line up an apartment, You know, you've got you put down the first month's rent, and okay, we've got this. We you know, 2 months ago we knew the name. We know how big the family is. We said we're going to take them. They're going to arrive on September 8th. You know. And then you get a call on September 7th. Oh, they're not coming. There was a problem with the flight. They're not coming until next week.
Yeah.
Now it's September 22nd, and you've already paid a month's worth of rent, right? So you do need some flexibility. Sometimes you say, all right, well, somebody else will go there. Let's talk about October 1st. In the meantime, they'll be temporarily with somebody.
And so that and those first few weeks are so busy, and part of our initiative is that we are going to mandate, that's a strong word, but because English language learning is so critical to the sense of home and the sense of comfort in this new life, we are mandating that our folks do intensive English language learning for the first 16 weeks, even before we're asking them to look for a job, so that they can learn some English language learning. And coupled with that is some cultural orientation and also some workforce vocabulary, so that once we start to go down the road of finding them a job, that there are certain words and certain concepts that have already been introduced to them in this process.
Something about language that I'm interested in, I think it would be wonderful if as many people in the community who are living here already could learn some language and
Absolutely.
Cultural greetings, you know, whether, you know, having little YouTube things
yep.
or on the community cable or links on the
it's
city's
the
website, you know, to some simple language and expressions that everybody in the community could, oh, you can click on your computer and get to that link and learn some language welcoming signs, you know, that we can put out some basic things because it needs to be a two-way street.
Absolutely.
And
Absolutely.
Language learning takes a long time.
And so our communication / public education working group is unfolding, is planning that kind of
it's already
stuff.
Happening with the Arabic speakers. There's
yeah.
a club at Jackson School, an Arabic club,
yeah.
as I understand.
Nice.
Yeah.
And I thought it was like Arab speakers kind of having a club, but part of it is teaching other people Arabic.
Yeah. Oh, anybody's welcome
yeah.
to
you know,
go.
Teaching
so Wednesday
third generation
afternoons.
People
yeah.
from Arab countries, but
yeah.
also that.
Yeah.
So they're very interested in doing that, teaching Arabic.
Did yeah. you have a question, Rich?
Africans is going to be a little more complicated. So we're not quite sure what languages it's going to be until they get here.
Yeah. It'll either be Swahili or Kirundi or French,
yeah.
But we won't know that until they arrive.
Yeah, we'll have to rely on people in the Springfield area to help out with that.
Like Suzanne, who's going to
yeah.
be such an important interpreter for us. She already is.
Will there be like kind of a... I understand that the families can only live with, you know, the American... You know, in the home for a couple weeks or whatever, but to like have something in place to keep that relation, you know, like a sponsor family
mm-hmm.
or something like
so
that.
That's so that's what our circles of care are about. That was another. That's a part of the volunteer piece I was going to talk about. We're forming circles of care, which will be 6 to 8 or 8 to 10 families that will commit to walking with a family, with a family. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. And they're just a critical key piece
yes.
to making this happen. Rich, you had a question. I want to.
It's probably about the same thing. You mentioned a 5-year
yeah.
thing. I just wanted to ask, basically, what do you want volunteers to do in the most general sense?
So it's going to look many different ways. In addition to the circles of care, which are specific groups, so with our Burundian women's group, transportation is a huge issue. Some mom may need to go to the grocery store, have a job interview, and child care. We have several women who are in the process of learning to drive. We need people to teach them to drive. Everybody looks at my manual stick shift and goes, I'm not learning on that thing. you know, learning to drive. What else? I mean, what are some other basic needs that are just inviting a family over for Thanksgiving dinner, taking a family to the library, going to the museum,
sitting down and reading a book with mom and youngster. You know, I mean, it looks a thousand different ways. Do you want to say more about that? What might that look like?
Yeah, help them look out what they need, see help from them. They doesn't mean they don't know nothing or they can do nothing. They can do anything except that they don't speak English. Mm-hmm. But as soon as they get it doesn't take long. It doesn't mean they didn't go to school. Some of them, they went to school, but in different language. But it doesn't take that long, I think. You might say, they propose 5 years. I'm telling you, it's not going to be 5 years. I've been there before. 1 year, 2 years, they'll be the independent.
You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I've been playing a recorded house meeting presentation by Susanna Krolius of Catholic Charities. This is WXOJ LP 103.3 FM in Northampton and streaming online at valleyfreeradio.org.